Clean up on aisle five. Somebody get a mop. It's the news, according to me. Yeah. Good morning. It is Wednesday, October 2nd, second day of the month, 8:15 a.m. Not quite as early as I thought it was going to be. It's a good day today. Today's a good day. Today's a good day. It's trash day. Taking out the trash. That's what happened last night. Somebody took out the trash last night. Yeah. It's a work day for me. I've got to head over. Well, I've got to head to the boat today. I'm going to head that way. I've got to be in that vicinity. Pretty unlikely there's anything for me to do today. But they're going to do something with me other than drink what's in my cup. So I have regular chai, Cinnabon Creamer. Now, that's the boring part. The other, the fantastic, exciting part is the backup cup, which is homemade sweet tea with peaches in it. My lovely wife did this thing where she takes this, we had a bunch of peaches, and of course, they're peaches, and peach season is kind of getting over with, at least in our area. And so she was buying up peaches kind of at the end of the summer there, and I had just come up with this brilliant idea to put peaches in my tea near the end of summer, of course. And so she took a bunch of these peaches, sliced and diced a bunch of them up, put them in little freezer bags, little bitty ones, like little small little packets, and just about the right size to put in a gallon of tea. Put those in the freezer, so I popped one of those out of the freezer yesterday and dropped that into my freshly made sweet tea. I have to say that works perfectly. It's just the right amount of peach. I think the flavor kind of transfers a little bit better once it's been frozen, because it's melting and it does this whole thing. I don't know. I don't know what the freezing. I don't know. Seems to work pretty well. Anyway, she also peeled the peaches, which is kind of nice. I usually just throw the peach in, peel. You know, I do peel some of them, but I just throw them in there. I wash them, of course. But, you know, so we have this, rubbing my hands together. It's getting cold out there. I think the temperature outside right now is 45 degrees today. I think it's 45 degrees out there, which I think is ridiculous. I don't know who thought of this. It's a global warming thing. So I'm just going to talk about the obvious today. I don't have a whole lot of time to have a show here, but I'm going to talk about the obvious thing that happened last night. I was going to have a show. I'm pretty sure that tomorrow morning I will also have a show again, but we'll have to see how this works out today, how it all pans out, what kind of position I'm going to be in for tomorrow. I'm going to talk about the First Amendment stuff a little bit tomorrow, but or sometime this week, and some things about speech and censorship and some of the other things that are happening, like a topic. But last night was, I happened to catch the debate between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz. It's interesting, there are some Democrats who are out there saying that Tim Walz won the debate. Most of the Democrats, especially the pundits, are all on the left, are all saying it was a good debate. Both of them, there's no clear winner. No clear winner in this debate. JD, you know, missed, you know, he kind of danced around a few questions and Tim Walz was a little shaky initially, but he came back, you know. And then, of course, there are some honest Democrats out there. Harold Ford Jr. is one of them. That he's actually on the five now, I think, typically. Kind of took Juan Williams' place. And I tell you what, I have a lot of respect for Harold. He's more of a statesman. He doesn't always just carry water for the Democrat Party. He has an honest perspective on things, and I appreciate that. But he also understands the Democrat philosophy. He understands kind of. So I think he's kind of caught in the middle. I think, like, a lot of times he probably agrees with them, but I appreciate the fact that he's actually honest about, you know, he had some skin. He was like a governor of Texas or something, or Tennessee or something. No, Tennessee or someplace. He was a governor or a he's in office of some kind. And I think there was some kind of scandal that he ended up getting kind of booted out. But he does a great job on the Five, in my opinion. I think he does a good job of presenting the leftist view, or the, I should say, the Democrat view. He's been more of a traditional Democrat, I guess. And I can respect that. Because there's some reasoning involved. You know, there's some common sense reasoning involved in where he comes to his conclusions. And it's these guys who they're just out of their minds. The leftists who just are totally nuts. He was laying there so peacefully, and then as soon as I start talking, he starts trying to dig a hole to China. Is it just my voice that causes this? So, anyway, Harold Ford Jr. came out and actually said, he said he thinks that Tim Walz, they both did a good job, but Tim Walz, you know, may have done a little bit better job tonight. That's kind of what he was saying last night. It's interesting. You know, if you interview people on the street, it's pretty obvious. If there's hardcore leftists, they're all saying, I think they both did a good job, but I think Tim Walz did a little better job. J.D. Vance, he danced around some of the questions. No, he didn't. Apparently, you got lost in some of his answers. That's the problem with Tim, with J.D., J.D., I think, did I say J.D., Tim? With the problem with Vance is he's very smart. So he not only will answer the question, he puts it in, he frames it in a whole other thing that actually works. And that's, I think that's why he dominated the whole thing. And at one point, he actually scolded the moderators, if you want to call them that, because it was turning into a 3-on-1 thing. That they started fact checking J.D. Vance, and of course he basically said, if you're going to do that, then I'm going to make this straight. I'm going to do the fact checking for you, because now Walz said some things, and again he says a lot of things out of he admits that he does this. I say a lot of things passionately when I'm. He was asked about this whole thing about him going to China and being there in Tiananmen Square. When the riots happened, well, they looked at records and they actually confronted him on this. The media actually confronted him on this. They said, "You said you went to Tiananmen Square. You were in Tiananmen Square when it happened, and that happened in whatever was it, July, I think it was, or June or July, and you were there in October. So how do you explain that?" Well, he went through this whole big long diatribe thing of but I take students and I was a coach and I did this and did that and I grew up in my home, I lived in my blah, 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 blah. Spent the whole minute or more than it seemed like more than a minute explaining himself. He got done. They said, and they actually confronted him. They said, "You didn't answer the question. So the question was, you said you were there and you weren't. How do you explain that?" They actually did their job at that point. I was quite astonished, I guess. And so they got done. I misspoke. You could have just said, "No, I wasn't there. I misspoke. Sorry." That would have been your explanation. That should have been your explanation instead of this whole big long diatribe trying to dance around the whole issue and come up with something. And we're supposed to sit there and go, okay, that's the typical answer that we would normally just, the media would just go, okay, and move on. And then they asked JD some questions about, you know, some things he had said earlier about Trump. Now he's been asked these questions many, many times. Because when Trump first came onto the scene, when he was running for the nominee in the primary, and then he was also running, you know, as the presidential candidate. There was a lot of I didn't like Trump when he first came out here. I had somebody else in mind I wanted to see there, and it was just this thing that I had kind of bought into, this whole idea that this guy, I just didn't, the guy just didn't, he just didn't, he seemed kind of, you know, he's just, his personality just wasn't what I was looking for in a presidential candidate. Now, I had one really good brother of mine who, not, not, my, my sibling, but my just a brother in the faith. He said, you know, I just think we need a businessman to come in and just, you know, somebody on the outside come in and kind of just fix this stuff. And that stuck with me because I respected what he said, and it's like, well, maybe it'll be all right. I think maybe you're right. At first, it was kind of like cringing against it. I was like, yeah, but he's a businessman, but I don't know. He's got all these issues. Got all this baggage. And I didn't care about whether I wasn't looking at a candidate as to whether or not they would win or not, as whether or not they would represent me well enough. Because I didn't know, you know, it was obvious they were going to run Hillary. Or at least it looked like it at that time. And so I was kind of like, well, okay, well, whatever, maybe. So it turned out, you know, as time went on and he was starting to win the popular vote, and the more I learned about what he was going to do and the kind of thing we were looking at, this whole idea of being anti-establishment and kind of, you know, trying to drain the swamp. I don't think he realized how big the swamp is and how deep it is. And I don't think most people do. I think most people don't realize how deep and how big the monster is and where its tentacles go. The swamp is the problem. It's not, of course, you know, D.C. was actually built where there was actually a swamp there. So that's why it's kind of called the drain the swamp thing. It is actually a swamp. So that's the problem. You can't just drain it. You got to get rid of it. So we have this huge, huge monster with its tentacles going everywhere. And I think J.D. was kind of along the same lines. I would have been, yeah, I kind of can relate to the guy a little bit, I guess, with regard to his upbringing and everything else. I didn't go to the military, but... He did, and he took him down a little bit different path in that respect. But he's a very intelligent guy. He's a very good communicator. There have been some people who've said that his communication skills and his ability to debate was probably as good as anything we've seen since Reagan. He was just very calm, and in my opinion, he was very articulate in the way he communicated his answers. Now, whether or not you liked his answers or not, I think that's the problem I think the left has is, well, he danced around the question. Well, I think he answered the question, but I think he didn't answer it the way you wanted him to answer it, or the way you were expecting him to answer it. I think that's where the problem comes in with some of that, because I tracked right along with what he was saying, and I thought he answered the question. But that's, some of them didn't think he answered questions very well, dance around questions. Talking about dance around questions, apparently the word salad thing has crept over into Tim Walz's, you know, mindset as well, because that's pretty much all we got with him. Every time he had a chance, he just talked about his, you know, I bought my first home, and I'm still living in my first home I bought. Well, I'm sure, you know, who knows whether how many. Then he says his 17-year-old son witnessed a school shooting, right? Or witnessed a shooting in front of him, witnessed a school shooting, whatever it was he said. And I thought J.D. was very gracious on that. He said, well, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that your son went through that. J.D.'s a Catholic. I can't remember the words he said, you know, Christ have mercy, whatever it was he said. He's trying to be gracious enough to say, I'm sorry to hear that. That is, that's, you know, horrible to hear. Now, the question is, did he actually do that? Because Tim says this kind of stuff. Just like he'll go through a little tribe of stuff. And one of the things he said last night was he's made friends with school shooters. If that's being, I don't think that's what he meant to say. We'll find out. I think what he meant to say was he's made friends with the victims of school shooters. I think that's what he probably meant to say. I don't think he's made friends with school shooters. Most school shooters, by the way, don't survive. It's very rare for them to survive. So how many school shooters have there been, and how many have you know? He said plural, school shooters, not a school shooter. So I don't know, you know, I'm sure David Hogg, I'm sure is one of his buddies, who was a victim of a school shooting. I think that's what he probably meant to say, but I don't know. I'm not going to take him at his word, and he's made friends with school shooters. Okay. And if you ask him to clarify that, he'll probably say, well, you know, when I was born I lived in a house and I was middle class and I was, you know, there you go. Okay. That's the kind of stuff we have to deal with now. So it is October. Now, I think even the pundits are out there going, okay, Vance pretty much cleaned the clock on this guy. I thought that Vance looked very, very calm, collected, and in control. Tim Walz came across very, just very nervous, almost in a panic. And I think it came through more from his voice. That he knew he was up against someone who had a command of the subject matter. I think he was intimidated. And I think that came through, at least when I was listening to his voice, that came through very quite clearly and quite strongly. The thing I think that's really a very positive thing from Vance is that he doesn't get bogged down in the minutiae of things. They brought up some things that just were kind of just ridiculous things. JD just basically said, we're looking towards the future. Let's just look towards the future and get this mess cleaned up. Because they kept saying, oh, this happened, that happened. You've done this, you've done that. They never confronted Vance over the governorship that he had over Minnesota and all the things that happened there with the George Floyd thing. And nobody talks about the fact that, you know, if this was such an atrocious thing that happened to George Floyd, what was really atrocious was that the fact that this guy was basically living in the street trying to survive off of making cigarettes or whatever he was doing, buying fentanyl. The whole fentanyl thing was the problem. And that was still kind of being, to some degree, we were kind of trying to get it under control. It was still becoming an issue. But now that the border is open, it's just ridiculous. There's so many people have died under this administration from fentanyl overdose that it's just, it's almost incalculable. They can't keep track of it at this point. But they care about us. This administration cares about us so much. So it's just an interesting debate. I think that it clearly spelled out. I think if there's any undecided voters now or anybody that was wishy-washy about J.D. Vance and what he stands for, I think that we're in very good hands should anything happen to Donald Trump or should 2028 roll around if everything goes well. Now, let's talk about this because this is where I think we're going with this. It's pretty clear to me that if they can't overcome this with hanky-panky stuff on election day and throughout the election season here, Trump will win. I think that Trump is going to win this election. I mean, it may be and end up being a huge landslide. Now, Pete Buttigieg, who's in charge of the transportation issues and some of the shipping issues, and he's quite involved with everything that's going on there. I think we have this issue right now where yesterday I'm surprised it went this far. Now, it's supply chain will still keep being fine if we go a few days here into this whole thing. But we have a situation where the dock workers now have gone on strike, I guess all the way from Maine all the way down through Texas, I think it's on the East Coast Union that controls the dock workers, have gone on strike. Of course, you got the head of the union, he's saying, we can bring everything to their knees. We can, you know, this country shuts down, we're locking the place down, and there's nothing coming in out of the borders, out of the shipping. And one of the things he said was everything comes into this nation on a ship. Well, that's not really true. Every day I see rather large airplanes flying in from China and every place else, cargo planes. So, they have air cargoes. I think he forgets that there's air cargo. Now, what amazes me is that the Railway Workers Act does not apply, apparently, to the dock workers. Believe it or not, the Railway Workers Act applies to the airline industry. How does that work? With regard to, when you're allowed to strike and what you can do. So just these weird rules, these deals that they make between government and unions because of the symbiotic relationship they have. They're more like a leech, I guess I would call it. Leech. Or more like a parasite, I guess. The worker strike, we got about 7 or 8 days to get this straightened out before it's really going to start affecting hugely in some things. Now, this is all coming at a time when we've got all this other chaos. We got Israel, the escalation of what's happening there with Beirut, with Lebanon, with oil fields in Iran now. I think somebody estimated that they've spent about $1.2 billion in this. Iran spent about $1.2 billion in the most recent airstrike they attempted to put on to Israel. And, of course, supposedly we helped them with one of our ships by helping to keep in conjunction with what they were doing. We helped them defend and we shot down missiles, that kind of thing, kind of the Iron Dome thing. Hamas is pretty much been gutted. Hezbollah now has had its head cut off, however, Hezbollah this whole time has been launching missiles from the north into Israel, and I guess it's estimated now that they launched about 400 missiles into Israel in the past few days, and I guess. Of course, now Iran had actually launched missiles, an airstrike, which was all shot down. They have apparently had a lot more mobile missile launcher trucks things than what most people realized since the last time that there was an attack or some kind of an altercation. They kind of gave away how many they had, the numbers that they had. Apparently, this one intelligence person that I listened to, he said that they apparently have either acquired or built several more, a lot more, to the tune of a couple hundred more. So, than what he realized, he's been out of active service for a while. He still operates as an independent consultant. So it's been kind of interesting to see what else happened there. But I digress. All this stuff happening. Well, in the meantime, the Iranian oil fields apparently are potential targets, or they have been targets for Israel. They're trying to, stop them from basically just kind of being an economic target. Basically, of course, that's going to cause there, and that involves OPEC and everything else over there on that side of the world, and that's of course going to have an effect on production, oil prices, gas prices. I would recommend everybody fill up their cars, keep their car, their tanks, their fuel tanks, at least half or more full. I always try to keep mine more than half full all the time anyway. Just in case. Now, I've got several vehicles, so it's kind of that way I have spare vehicles as well, and I also have some small jerry rigs or jerry cans that I keep a lot of fuel in as well. So all those things kind of add up after a while. You have the ability to have at least some mobility if you need it, if things really go haywire. So got that going for me. I just recommend that. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a petroleum transport engineer. I used to be a petroleum transport. I worked at a gas station back in the day when people used to pump gas at stations. You know, where you'd pull into the station, full service station, and they would clean your windshield, check your oil, pump your gas, do whatever else you needed, check your air and your tires, do all that stuff for free. Well, it was, gas cost a little bit more. Occasionally you get a tip for that. I used to do that. I was that guy. Come running out, fill it up with unleaded or regular, whatever it was. And because they'd fill it up, do the whole thing, it was like, you know, $10. Now it's a little bit more than that. Now it's, you know, basically it's a store. It's a convenience store with happens to sell gas. You got to pump it yourself. Anyway, I grew up in a different time. Well, Walt said something very interesting last night, and it seems like the left has no cognizance of awareness of their of where things are going. You know, we continue to progress. We've progressively gone down this road. He said, I grew up in a time when I used to take my gun to school and go pheasant hunting after school. You know, because I had my gun in my car, and we can't do that anymore. We don't live in that society anymore. Which direction do you think our society has gone? You think it's become more liberal or more conservative in its values and what the schools teach and what we learn every day and what we are told every day? If you look back to the years of the 60s and 70s, even with the riots going on in the 60s, we had a much more, in my opinion, conservative view of government. There were much higher morals, in my opinion, in days past. The Bible was still taught in school when I was going to public school. Now, we had this deal in grade school. We had a Bible class, but it was voluntary. You had to have a note from your teacher, or the teacher gave you a note to take home to your parents. You had to sign it to say it was okay for you to go to Bible class. Of course, I did. I went to Bible class. And I probably wasn't the best student in that class. There were a couple girls in there that I probably was trying to impress too much, flirted around a little bit. I don't know. It's, you know, how in the way that grade school kids do. I wasn't, you know, just trying to get their attention. Doing stupid stuff, so I went to that. Now the high school, the junior high and high school that I went to, also had a Bible class and a Bible club after school. Bible club. I was never able to join those because I always had other things going. I was very busy with band. I was a drummer. And I was in swing band, stage band, swing choir. I played drums for swing choir. I wasn't a singer, but I did that. And I was kind of a busy kid in that respect. And I wasn't busy. We had shop class back then. This is back when you actually had, you know, power tools, saws, lathes, band saws, planers, radial arm saws, which are ridiculous. Had all that stuff in the class. And we'd build stuff. We had a shop class as well. So we'd do automotive stuff and shop and all kinds of things. We also had had some interesting stuff there. It was pretty, pretty cool. But one of the kids that I remember, he was a year or two behind me in school. I think it was a Bridgeport mill, which is a metal mill that you can put a block of metal in there, and you can put whatever kind of part you need in there and mill things. You know, it's down to tenths of thousands of an inch. It was all manual type mill. Very good machine, very heavy duty. Had one of those in there. Also had a metal lathe, had some other things. And apparently there was this one little class that was, they taught that kind of thing. And this one guy in our class was doing that kind of stuff. Well, he was also one of the guys who did, when we first had a computer, we had a Tandy, the Tandy 1000 or whatever it was. You had to put this big floppy, literally a floppy disk. It was like 10 inches wide, but you had to put that into a thing and it would spin and boot up the computer, and you could do things with the computer and program it and do all kinds of interesting things. It was all monochrome screens, of course. He did all, he was kind of the kid that was the first generation that got to do that stuff. And I just remember they kept that thing under lock and key. Boy, they had it on a big cart. They would roll it out for a special class. And he was kind of the one, who was always he was that computer geek nerd before there was such a thing as a computer geek nerd. He became a business owner in our community, working with lasers. He started I think it's called Laser Accents, actually. That's what the name of the company is, or the business. I don't know if it's still in business or not. He had some kids, he had some boys. I don't know if they continued on with the business or if he's retired and sold the business or if he just closed it down. I don't know what has happened with it. But I do know that he did very well with that business. He did a lot of things at home. He got into 3D printing and all kinds of things. He was kind of at the forefront of all that stuff in this community. And I think that looking back on that, I think that the high school experience he had really launched him into the success that he had in that business. Now it's very encouraging when I see a school system. When I look back on that, I realize the school system probably realized, hey, this guy is a gem of our community. This kid's got some potential, and he's living up to it. They always told me I had a lot of potential, but they never said anything about me, you know, living it. The reports that I always got back to the house was, he has a lot of potential. And that's all they said. He has a lot of potential. never said anything about me living up to it, or, you know, he's going to fulfill it, or he's got the, you know, but all the other things that you need in your character to get there to make that potential work. Everybody's got a lot of potential. Yeah, I don't know. My one grade school teacher, I think it was in second grade, I drew this picture of a dog. And it turned out pretty good. I look back on it now and I'm like, I can't even believe that was me in second grade. I was 7 years, 6 years old. I drew that. But the one thing, the teacher, you know, graded it and she put it on the back of it. She said, I think we have an artist here. My mom kept that picture. When my mom passed away, I found that picture in her stuff. And once in a while, she'd pull it out and show it to me, though, through the years. But I hadn't seen it for probably 10, 15 years. And she was not in very good mental health at the end. But she still had it in her stuff, which is kind of, among other things, she had a lot of other, you know, pictures of just interesting. She kept some pretty good stuff, I mean, in terms of memories. But it was, unfortunately, her memory didn't serve her well in the end. But so, where was I? The debate, the things that are going on. We have October here, and I think that they're starting to panic because they realize, hey, this is not going away. Our rhetoric that we're out there with this whole time, they just continue to hammer this rhetoric of Donald Trump is a monster, democracy's on the ballot, we're gonna lose our democracy if Donald Trump wins. He's gonna prosecute his enemies. He's gonna, you know, whatever. You know, we're gonna lose our democracy. The country's not gonna be. We're not gonna lose. We're gonna lose our country. All this stuff. He's a Hitler. All this stuff continues. The rhetoric just goes on and on and on and on and on. And I think that the American people, I think that especially the independents and the undecideds, the moderates, I think they're actually getting really tired of hearing it. The lawfare cases that have been going on against Donald Trump, I think, have grown very weary of people. I think people are realizing that this is just bogus. You're sitting there claiming that Donald Trump is going to incarcerate and imprison his political enemies. And yet that's exactly what you're trying to do. That he's going to eliminate elections from now on. He's going to be in office forever. We were told last night one of the things that really I thought really should have been stabbed in the back, or as soon as it was stabbed in the heart, as soon as he said it, he said, you know, Donald Trump, when Iran shot down one of our airplanes, all he did was tweet. And then when a bomb went off near one of our bases, and there were some severe head injuries, severe brain injuries, traumatic brain injuries happened. When a bomb was dropped near one of our bases, traumatic brain damage, traumatic brain injuries. They complained of headaches. They did complain. Please come forward with this information of people actually having severe brain trauma, because we can't find anything. I was looking. I've heard other pundits say something about it. I was like, I don't remember that happening. I remember the bombs being dropped, but it was. In fact, they gave us warning the bombs were going to be dropped, and they shot the drone. It was a drone, by the way. It wasn't a. And it was all in retaliation response to. They were trying to save face, and it was in response to us killing that, assassinating basically that one guy, the one leader. I can't pronounce his name. He was eliminated, some kind of terror. He was a bad guy. He was a bad dude. And at least as far as I know, that's what I've been told. The things that he was doing were, I think he made his own government nervous. So they had to do this. So Trump basically tweeted and said, this is an unmanned drone. We're not going to retaliate for something. So there was no loss of life. We're not going to escalate this. Then he... of course, the bombs were dropped near one of our bases, or missiles, whatever it was. No loss of life, and I think Trump tweeted that there was some. Basically, what I understand is that there's some ear damage from the noises, from the explosions. And he said that's why he said there was some headaches. We don't know anything of any severe. Brain trauma. But that's what he trumps it. You know, he just elevates all this stuff. You know, constantly going overboard on things that he says. And I think that that's probably going to catch up with him, because I think there's some people on that case. They're going to come back and say, who are these people who had brain injuries? Because there was no reports of that. He's just hope. It's like he spits this stuff out there. Hoping that we just, oh my goodness. Like we're just going to take him at his word for it. I don't think we can take this guy at his word for anything. And he says his son was a witness of a school shooting. I'd like for somebody to look that up as well. When did that happen? And right away, he's going out there for the sympathy thing, the dramatic. He does it constantly. He's like weapons I took carried off to war. When did you carry off? When did you carry weapons off to war? Well, I was served in the. That's why I. Oh, okay. There you go. This is the kind of stuff he does all the time. He's a serial exaggerator with lies involved. On top of it. So it's just, and I think it's, now apparently Kamala Harris has come out and said something about this guy. Somebody asked him about, do you think this was the right choice that you made? Now, I don't know if she was joking. All I know is what she said was she was in the middle of a campaign and she was sleep deprived. And when she made this decision, and of course all this stuff was happening because, you know, she was kind of thrown into this whole thing all at once when Joe Biden all of a sudden didn't perform well. You know, 24 hours earlier, we were being told that Joe Biden was the best Joe Biden version we've ever seen. He was more cogent than anybody else in the world, and he was the best person on the planet. And then all of a sudden, he's the most heroic person for stepping down and letting a new generation take over. This is the same. I'd like to go through. I'm going to go through an entire list of all the things that the left-wing media has told us over the past 7 years, 6 years. I'm kind of putting this list together. to talk about all the supposed conspiracy theories, the misinformation, disinformation, the radical, you know, the QAnon stuff that they kept pushing us off on us on, dismissing us, all the dismissive things, the cheap fakes, everything else they said about it, about things that were going on. And we were lectured about how wrong we were, either from pundits and or from the White House DEI hire, the historic Jean-Claude Pierre. Jen Psaki, all these other people who've told us things all these years and that we're supposed to believe. Oh, I think it actually goes back, no, I'm sorry, 10 years. Because it goes back through the whole Russia thing. Everything that they were talking about and everything that they were saying, it was just... And yet we're supposed to believe now everything that they say going forward. In terms of credibility, if you just start stacking up the things that they've said, that they've been wrong about. And they had the audacity last night to even ask J.D. Vance. So if you've been, you know, Donald Trump thinks that climate change is a hoax and all that kind of stuff. Do you believe it's a hoax or not? You know, they what do you think about him saying that? Because he has come out and said he thinks we need to do things about climate change. Now, personally, here's my personal belief. Now, I'm not an environmentalist. I do study the weather quite often. I typically can forecast the weather better in my area than my local forecaster can, because they're usually not from this area. I'm very, very intimately familiar with what happens with the lake effect here and what goes on around this particular area with system storms and lake effects weather. And because of that, I've been very astute about weather around the world, and most pilots will tell you they can usually see what's going on with the weather before the weatherman can, because we're up there in this stuff and we fly around in it. And our life depends on being able to know what's going to happen with the weather. And if you don't pay attention, regardless of what the forecast says, and they might say, well, the weather's moving in from the, and this is going to happen. It's like, yeah, no, it's not, because this is here and this is going to get worse, or this is going to get better. Now, you always assume it's going to get worse. Hope that it gets better. But it's, your life depends on this stuff. I mean, for almost every year, for several years, as I was a younger pilot back in the 90s and early 2000s, it seemed like almost every year we would lose a pilot up here in the Great Lakes area due to icing. Usually it was a small twin-engine Cessna, piston-engine Cessna, or some kind of a twin-engine airplane. Got into weather near the lake, ended up icing up and going in. It almost happened to me. I was in a twin-engine 401 flying charter. Ice started building up. I was coming back from Rochester, New York, flying near the shoreline of course, we can't, with a twin-engine airplane like that, we're usually not going over 10,000 feet, because then once you get up that high, the air's starting to get kind of thin. You're starting to get kind of loopy after you've been up there a while. I was probably up at 8,000 or 9,000 feet, maybe 10,000, and coming back with some cargo. And actually, I don't think I had the cargo. I think I took the cargo. No, yeah, I was bringing the cargo back. And sure enough, got into some ice. Couldn't see out the windshield, which, you know, it's not a big deal. Instruments. I was in the clouds anyway. But I'd been in enough ice, enough of my time. I probably had 3,000 hours at that time, flying time. A lot of it was charter and everything else. And I knew that, hey, I just need to adjust my altitude. So usually about 1,000 feet is all it takes to get out of the icing situation. So I right away started getting out of that. And sure enough, I descended down to where I knew the temperature was, to where the layer was, and the ice just flew off. But just staying in it would have been deadly. You know, unfortunately, that's what some guys do. They don't realize they're getting into ice. They don't realize how critical it becomes, how quickly you need to get out of it if it's building quickly. And it can build very quickly around lake areas like that, because there's a lot of moisture in the air, a lot of things happening. So it's just those kinds of things. I don't even know how I got off on this subject. And we're told, you know, that you learn about the weather and climate change. There are some world leaders out there who are saying climate change is a hoax. This is. I just saw a Babylon Bee yesterday said Noah could have avoided having to build the ark if he had just realized that paying more taxes would have staved off climate change. That's really what this is about. This is about control. They're claiming now with this big hurricane that has come through, well, this is just going to keep happening because of climate change. Hurricanes are more powerful now than they've ever been. This wasn't the most powerful hurricane that's ever hit the United States. They're claiming now this is one of the deadliest storms we've ever had. I don't know if you realize Galveston was hit by a hurricane, killed everybody. There are all kinds of storms that have hit this country over the past couple centuries. It has been far more deadly. Now, the amount of damage that's done because we didn't have the infrastructure that we have now, the kind of things that can be torn up. And I remember back to the whatever it was, Katrina. Was it Katrina that hit the Louisiana area? That whole thing that happened there, and the whole response by George Bush and everything, and how they blamed him for everything, even though the whole reason for the flooding in Katrina or in Louisiana, New Orleans, was because of the pumps that supposedly all kinds of money had been given by the federal government to the city of New Orleans, or the county, or whoever it was, the state. All kinds of funding was given to them for managing the water issue there, because that place is actually underwater. It's a swamp. It's below sea level. They were claiming I remember seeing their news reports during the storm. They were claiming the pumps are being overwhelmed. Well, the pumps were broken. They were broken before the storm. They didn't even fix them when they knew the storm was out there, because they were so beyond repair they couldn't get them fixed. They would have had to fly parts in for that. The pumps were not even working. There were at least two or three major pumps that were not working before the storm rolled in. And they just claimed, well, they were just overwhelmed. The pumps were overwhelmed. But they weren't even working. That money was misappropriated. It was used for other things. No one was ever held accountable for that, by the way. I think one particular politician took the fall and ended up resigning, and that was all that happened. I don't even know what the... I think it was just a bureaucrat. I don't even think it was an actual politician. He passed the buck off onto some poor guy. Kind of stuff we're dealing with. But we're supposed to be told that because they're using this major storm. Oh, look, we got this major storm. This is because of climate change. Now, climate's always changing. We are actually at one of the coolest periods of our history of our country. Somebody did a report the other day. There's some really good stuff about. And by the way, according to the experts, the warmer the climate gets, the warmer the Earth gets, the fewer hurricanes we have. During a period where we had some of the warmest temperatures recorded globally, we had the fewest years of hurricanes. We were told by Al Gore back in 2000 that this, you know, climate change, we're going to keep having all this stuff. This climate change was the big deal. Of course, now he established an organization that deals in carbon credits. So you can carbon offset, you can carbon neutral yourself by buying carbon credits. Well, I donated $1 million to a tree farm, so they're going to grow these trees, and that way I can go out and fly my private jet. Because I'm creating all this oxygen rich, and there's no verification these trees are being planted or anything. It's just a big scam. Just all the way that the rich, the powerful, the oligarchs can continue with their little way of life and sleep at night because they think that they're balancing out their lives. They're carbon neutral. you'll hear some of the richer people in Hollywood. Well, I'm carbon neutral. I carbon offset. I do this. Every time I drive my car, I do this, I do that. I drive a Tesla. Oh, I'm not going to have a Tesla now because racism. So I'm going to drive a Leaf. Because, you know, Ford. There was never any racism there. The Ford Motor Company. Or GM or any of these unions never had any racism at all. So, we're going to talk about more about free speech in the days ahead here, with the next couple of days. What the plan is to basically have more on, a bit more about free speech, censorship, those things that are happening. And with October being here now, with you know, about a month ago, we're probably going to see some interesting things happen. My opinion is, with this whole thing with the strikes and everything that's going on, I think that the panic is setting in on the left. I believe they want to crash the economy or set the economy up to crash so that Trump has to deal with it, and they're going to blame it all on him. That's my opinion. And I believe we are going to be in for some tough times, because what this administration has done is going to have impact into the next 2 years, at least. I wouldn't want to step into the presidency at this point. I think they can put some temporary fixes on some things. They can kind of stop. They can stop the landslide right now, but in order to keep it from going, or at least they can shore up some things and kind of get us ready for this. But I think that we are headed for some extremely tough times because of what has happened. I don't think it's going to get better before it gets a little bit worse. I think in the midst of it, we're going to have some hope, at least in the middle of it. But I do believe that it's going to be very tough, because they are going to, this is what you call scorched earth politics. They're going to, on their way out the door, it's like the Clintons did when they were on their way out the door. They took all the bureaucrats in Washington, all the offices, the Clinton offices in the Democrat Party, bureaucrat hacks, removed all the W's off of all the keyboards. Just that kind of crap. Because it was George W. Bush, and he was rubbing the dumb W. He took all the W's off the keyboards. He took a bunch of furniture. He did all kinds of crazy stuff. It was scorched earth. They were so mad about losing the election in 2000. And that's nothing compared to how mad they're going to be this time. And they're going to think that they're the ones in the right, even though they've lost by, you know, a majority vote. By the Electoral College, by our system, they're going to throw a tizzy fit. This is not going to be an easy presidency for Donald Trump. It's not going to be easy to win people over, because these people are so deranged, so out of touch, so ridiculously convinced that this monster is in charge, and now the country is going to go. They're going to have their little personal little lives all disrupted. Everything's going to be his fault. So, we shall see what we shall see. Thanks for listening, folks. I've got to get going. I've actually went a lot longer than I thought. I told my little stories, and of course, that always goes a lot longer. Might be a show tomorrow morning. We'll see how this works out. I don't know. It's going to be very iffy next couple days, but we'll see how this works out. I hoped to have a show tomorrow. In the meantime, if not tomorrow and Friday, then Shabbat Shalom for you on Saturday. But this is, we're in for a very, I think, interesting ride over the next 30 days. Things that will probably happen, because I believe that the Democrats are realizing they are not in a good position here. Nothing has really taken a Kamala over the top. They celebrate like crazy when Kamala gets a little bit ahead in polls. And now they're realizing it's not over. It's not over. And Kamala's not doing so well, because she doesn't do things well. God bless, folks. Pray for our nation. Pray for each other. Take care.